Chapter 3. The Seventh Proof.
Yes, it was about 10 o'clock in the morning, my esteemed Ivan Nikolaevich, said the professor.
The poet wiped his face like a man who had just woken up and saw that evening had come to the patriarchs. The water in the pond had turned black, and a small boat was already gliding along it, accompanied by the splashing of oars and some woman's laughter. People appeared on the benches in the alley, but again on all sides of the square, except the one where our companions were sitting. Moscow's sky had faded, and only the moon hung high above in perfect clarity, not yet golden, but simply white. It became a lot easier to breathe, and the voices underneath the lindens took on a softer evening tone.
"How did I miss it?" Homeless wondered in amazement. "He's managed to weave together a whole tale. It's evening already. Or perhaps there never was a tale, and I merely fell asleep and dreamt it all."
One must grant, however, that either the professor had told the story after all, or that Berlioz had had an identical dream. For the editor now spoke, peering carefully into the foreigner's face.
"Your narrative is most interesting, Professor, even though it does not agree with gospel accounts in the least."
"Please," the professor replied with a condescending chuckle, "you of all people ought to know that absolutely nothing in the Gospels has ever actually taken place. Why, if we begin to treat the Gospels as a historical source..."
The professor chuckled again, and Berlioz stopped short, for he had been saying literally the same thing to Homeless as they walked down Bronnaya towards Patriarch's Ponds.
"That may be," Berlioz noted, "but I'm afraid that, likewise, no one can verify that any of what you told us actually happened."
"But no, someone can too verify it," replied the professor
with utmost confidence, lapsing into broken Russian.
With an air of mystery, he suddenly beckoned the two companions closer. They leaned towards him from either side, and he said, without a trace of the accent that, hell knew why, just seemed to come and go at random,
"The thing is..."
Here the professor looked round fearfully and began to whisper.
"I was there personally for all of it. I was on Pontius Pilate's balcony, and in the garden when he spoke to Caiaphas, and on the platform too, only secretly, incognito, so to speak. So please, not a word to anyone. Complete secrecy."
"Shh!" Silence fell, and Berlioz grew pale.
How long have you been in Moscow?"
he asked in a trembling voice.
"Oh, I arrived in Moscow just now," the professor said absent-mindedly.
Only now did the companions think to look him carefully in the eyes, and they discovered that the green, left one, was utterly mad, while the right was empty, black, and lifeless.
"There's your explanation for you," Berlioz thought incredulously. "An insane German came to town, or perhaps he just went mad on the patriarchs. Now that's something."
Indeed, this explained everything. The most peculiar breakfast with the deceased philosopher Kant, the moronic babbling about sunflower oil and Anushka, the predictions of decapitation and everything else. The professor was insane. Berlioz quickly realized what needed to be done. Leaning back on the bench, he began to wink at Homeless behind the professor's back.
"Humour him, eh?"
But the confused poet did not get the message.
"Yes, yes, yes," Berlioz said excitedly. "That's all possible, after all, quite possible. In fact, Pontius Pilate and the balcony and so on. Have you come alone or with your spouse?"
"Alone, alone. I'm always alone,"
the professor replied bitterly.
"And where are your things, Professor?"
Berlioz asked insinuatingly.
"At the Metropole? Where are you staying?"
"Me? Nowhere,"
said the German half-wit, his wretched and deranged green eye drifting over Patriarch's Ponds.
"What? But where are you going to live?"
"In your apartment,"
the madman replied cheekily all of a sudden, and winked.
I am very glad," Berlioz muttered. But you would find the place inconvenient, really. They have wonderful suites at the Metropole. It's a first-class hotel.
So the devil doesn't exist either, then?
The sick man inquired of Ivan Nikolaevich with sudden mirth. And the devil?
Don't contradict him,
mouthed Berlioz, diving behind the professor's back and grimacing at Homeless.
There's no bloody devil,
cried Ivan Nikolaevich, botching the plan, completely disorientated by all this nonsense.
What a pain! Would you quit your tantrums already?
The lunatic burst out laughing so hard that a frightened sparrow fluttered from the lindens above.
Well, now, this is positively intriguing, said the professor, quaking with laughter. What's this? Ask them for anything? It just doesn't exist.
Suddenly, he stopped laughing and, quite understandably for a mental patient, lapsed into the other extreme. Growing irritated, he cried sternly,
So he just doesn't exist, and that's that.
Calm down, Professor,
Berlioz mumbled, afraid to disturb the sick man further.
Sit here a minute next to Comrade Homeless, and I'll just run over to the corner for a quick phone call. Afterwards, we'll gladly take you anywhere you want. You don't know the city, after all.
Berlioz's plan was admittedly sound. He needed to run to the nearest payphone and inform the Travellers' Bureau that a foreign consultant was sitting at Patriarch's Ponds in a clearly deranged state of mind. As a result, it was necessary to take certain measures before the situation became unpleasant.
A call? Well, go ahead, call, the professor agreed miserably,
and then asked with sudden passion,
But I beg you, in parting, at least to believe that the devil exists. I do not ask you for more. Keep in mind that there is a seventh proof,
and the most reliable,
and it will be presented to you shortly.
All right,
Berlioz said in a falsely gentle voice, winking at the distressed poet, who did not relish the thought of guarding an insane German in the least. He headed to the exit from the Patriarchs at the corner of Bronaya and Gemalevsky Lane. At once, the professor seemed to get better, and his face brightened.
Mikhail Alexandrovich,
he yelled after Berlioz. The latter shuddered and turned, but then calmed himself with the thought that the professor must have also learned his name from some newspaper. Cupping his hands to his mouth, the professor shouted,
If you would have it, I can instantly order a telegram sent to your uncle in Kiev.
And again, an unsettling tremor passed over Berlioz. How does the madman know of his Kievan uncle? Surely no newspaper could have mentioned that. Hey, could Homeless be right? What if his papers are phony? Oh, what a peculiar character. Call at once. They'll quickly set him straight. Listening no further, Berlioz ran off. Right at the exit to Bronaya, the exact same person who had previously materialized from the balmy heat in the sunlight rose from a bench to meet the editor. This time, however, he was no longer ethereal, but made of ordinary flesh and blood. In the setting twilight, Berlioz clearly saw his little chicken-feather moustache, his sardonic, half-drunk little eyes, and his little checked trousers, pulled up so far that his dirty white socks were showing. Mikhail Alexandrovich staggered backwards, but then appeased himself with the notion that it was all a silly coincidence, and that now was no time to waste harping on it.
"Looking for the turnstile, mister?"
the checkered character inquired in a crackling tenor.
"Right this way, please. Straight on, and you'll find it. Say, how about the price of a pint for the tip? For an ex-choir master, help me get back on my feet."
Making faces, the odd subject sweepingly removed his tiny jockey cap. Berlioz ignored the choir master, evidently a beggar and a poseur, and ran towards the turnstile. Grasping and turning the spindle, he was about to step on the rails when red and white light sprayed in his face. A glass box lit up with the warning sign. Caution. Tram. Instantly came the tram itself, turning on the newly laid line from Gemalevsky to Bronaya. Completing its turn and entering the straightway, the tram suddenly lit up with electricity, whined, and put on speed. Though he was out of danger, the cautious Berlioz decided to retreat behind the barrier.
He moved his hand on the turnstile and took a step backwards. Immediately, his hand slipped and lost its grip, while his foot skidded relentlessly along the steep cobblestones that led to the rails, as though on ice. His other foot flew up, and Berlioz was thrown onto the track. Fumbling for a handhold, Berlioz fell flat on his back, banging his head lightly on a cobblestone, and had time to see the gilded moon somewhere above him. Right or left, he couldn't tell. He had time to turn on his side and pull his legs up to his stomach in a frenzied motion. He caught sight of the female conductress in a crimson headband, her face white with fear as it rushed towards him with unstoppable force. Berlioz did not make a sound, but the entire street around him exploded with frantic women's screams. The conductress tore at the emergency brake. The tram dug its nose into the ground and then jumped briefly in the air, sending glass flying from its windows with a ringing crash. In Berlioz's mind, someone cried frantically, "Could it be?" Once more, and for the last time, the moon flashed above and broke into pieces. And then everything went black. The tram covered Berlioz, and a dark, round object was thrown onto the incline beneath the fence of Patriarch's Lane. Rolling off the incline, it bounced over the cobblestones on Bronaia. It was the severed head of Berlioz.